And this is KPCW. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's 8:06 on this Monday morning, April 28th. And currently we've got 34 degrees here in Old Town Park City, 38 degrees in the Heber Valley under mostly sunny skies. On the phone with us, I believe, from the ABC Forecast Center, Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Yes, we are dealing with some clouds out there. We've got a cutoff low pressure system that's slowly going to be pivoting through the state today. So what that means is not to cancel any of your outdoor plans, but do know we'll have a couple of scattered rain showers from time to time. And for areas above about 7,000 feet, that's where we could even have some snow showers from time to time, especially as we go throughout late this morning before we start to really warm things up. But overall, a chance for a few scattered showers throughout the day. Again, they'll last about 20 to 30 minutes apiece, and then they'll clear on out of there. So no need to cancel any plans. But temperatures will be a little cooler today with highs only in the upper 50s there in the Heber Valley. We're looking at highs, though, only in the upper 40s to near 50 in Park City. So you will notice a cooler change out there as we go throughout today. That cutoff low pressure system moves to our east into Colorado as we go into your Tuesday. So we're looking at just partly cloudy skies on Tuesday. Temperatures will start off around the freezing mark Tuesday morning, and then we'll see those highs climbing into the upper 50s there in Park City with highs back into the mid-60s there as we get towards the Heber Valley. Now, another quick-moving front moves our way as we get into your Wednesday. That's going to bring more changes, including a better chance of some rain showers moving in. I think more widespread rain showers are expected as we get into your Wednesday morning commute. With those temperatures in the upper 30s, high temperatures will struggle to reach the low 50s in Park City on Wednesday afternoon and only be around 60 degrees in the Heber Valley with those scattered showers. So basically, we're going to be looking at unsettled weather conditions with a chance of precipitation every other day in this forecast. So a chance today, we'll get a break on your Tuesday, another chance arrives on your Wednesday, and then we'll get another bit of a break here as we go into your Thursday and Friday with just partly cloudy skies. Temperatures will be into the low to mid 30s to kick off the day with high temperatures right around 60 in Park City on your Thursday with highs in the upper 60s in the Heber Valley. We're going to be looking at highs in the low 70s by the time we get towards your Friday in the Heber Valley with partly cloudy skies and high temperatures into the mid 60s in Park City with partly cloudy skies. But by Friday night, we start to track our next storm system. This one could be an overall stronger storm that will move in. And again, that arrives Friday night, but really heading into your Saturday and Sunday. Right now, the weekend does look unsettled, unfortunately, with a chance of showers around the area as we go into your Saturday. Park City will see a high temperature in the mid 60s on your Saturday with highs still in the low 70s. On your Saturday in the Heber Valley, those showers will turn into a chance of rain and thunderstorms as we get towards your Sunday. High temperatures on Sunday in the upper 40s in Park City, and highs will be into the mid 50s in the Heber Valley, so it'll turn a little cooler again. But overall, the theme is unsettled weather for us as we go throughout this week, with again a chance of precipitation about every other day or so expected, but nothing that's going to be too intense until we get towards maybe the end of the weekend. Let's
Okay. Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with High Valley Transit Executive Director Caroline Rodriguez with an update on new facilities and the grand opening of the summer bus schedule. She'll be joined by Gabe Shields, who serves as the Chief Development Officer for High Valley Transit. Later on, Figure Skating Club of Park City Skaters Dash Williams and Ceci Shefford, along with co-chair of the production, Emily Boyd, with details on this year's spring show. And finally, Park City Chamber Bureau CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff with a monthly lodging update and registration details for this year's Wasatch Back Economic Summit. High Valley Transit getting ready to move into its new headquarters and will be also hosting some open houses, discuss its plans for bus rapid transit lanes. On the phone, I have High Valley Transit Executive Director Caroline Rodriguez, joined in studio by Chief Development Officer Gabe Shields. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Okay, real close to that mic there, Gabe. Yeah, just pull it up a little bit. Thank you. Caroline, let's start where you with you and where we are now for the new facilities. Of course, the white bus tent is down at the Ecker Hill Park and Ride.
It is down, and I am calling you this morning from our new office.
Okay.
So we are in.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yes.
All right,
just
and that's...
Just as of last week... we are in every facility, including the bus barn and the maintenance bay and the administration building.
Okay, located off of exit 2 there on US 40?
Correct.
All right. The phones work. That's a good sign.
My phone works. But yes, actually, the office phones do work. We've been testing everything quite a bit since we've been here in the last week.
Okay. What else needs to be done? Anything there?
Now we just have punch list items. For example, fixing paint that went, you know, that we hit moving in and things like that. But all of the major health, safety, and welfare items are done, and major infrastructure all done and complete. Last infrastructure item, I should say, actually, is that we are what we call commissioning our electric vehicle chargers. And that's where the manufacturers of the electric vehicle chargers come out and calibrate and program them to make sure that they work with our buses. And that's the last major piece. And then everything should be ship shape. I say that never having constructed a building of this size. So we'll see how I'm feeling 2 weeks from now, I guess.
Yeah. And why are the electric bus chargers way over there? I mean, it's really not part of a route, at least yet.
It is part of a route, but the reason they're here is because these particular chargers are overnight chargers. So while our buses are parked in the bus barn, they charge continually overnight, and then they're ready to run a half day of service in the morning.
Got it. All right. So I do believe you are planning a grand opening. When will that be?
That is May 9th. It's our official ribbon cutting, and we're really excited about it.
Okay, can you give us the details of that? May 9th, what time?
So it's going to be May 9th at 3 p.m. At this point, it is invite only because of the security access that we have to maintain as part of a federal facility. We do have some of our congressional delegation coming, and luckily we were able to secure the Park City High School Jazz Band to play while people are getting tours of the facility. If any of the general public is interested in a tour, we are absolutely happy to provide that. It will be a private tour, again, because of that federal security requirement, but they can just reach out to me directly, and I'm happy to show anyone around the entire 8-acre campus.
That's interesting. Tell me why that federal facility requires special security measures.
It doesn't require special security measures that are different from any other federal operations facility, but because we do have operations and what they call a federal interest in capital here, we have to maintain pretty strict security with gates and swipe cards, and we really need to know who's on site at any time.
All right. How much did all of that cost?
So the entire facility, all in, including, you know, purchase of land and prepping the land, was right around $46 million.
And how is that all being paid off?
Well, about 30% of it came through federal grants, and the rest of it was local funding through the transit district's bonding capacity and some local sales tax revenues that we had saved up.
Okay. So what's the bond for, and we're paying that off, what, over 20 years?
I believe it's a 20-year cycle, and at the time we took out the bond, let me see, you're testing my memory now. I believe the bonding was for $19 million.
Okay. Let's talk now real quick about just their summer bus routes. We've made that changeover. Can you talk about some of the changes there?
Yeah, exactly. So we have made the changeover. The most significant impact is that the 109 Snowball Express is no longer. And then we've changed some of the frequencies on our 224 service. We've decreased frequency to between 15 to 30 minute service. However, because we have overlapping service on 224, customers will still essentially feel the same in that about every 10 minutes there'll be a bus on 224.
And that includes the ones being run by you as well as by Park City Municipal?
Park City Municipal, they don't run any buses on 224 anymore, but that's a combination of the 10X and the 101.
Okay. All right. Let's see. We have got some BRT open houses. Four of them are scheduled. Is this what we're talking to you about, Gabe?
Yes, absolutely. So we finished our 30% design milestone earlier this spring, and now we're excited to go out to the public coming up in the next couple weeks. So we've got two open houses in person. So that is April 29th at the Richens Building from 5:30 to 7, and another one on May 6th at McPullen Elementary from 5:30 to 7. And then we also have two virtual options during the day. So that's May 1st and May 8th on Zoom from 12 to 1:30.
Do people need to pre-register then for those Zooms?
We do not.
Okay, how would people find that Zoom link?
So that's going to be on our website.
Okay, highvalleytransit.org.
.gov.
.gov, okay. Tell me, what are people going to get out of being at one of these open houses?
Sure, so this is going to be really our first major outreach since the environmental phase. We're excited to show off all the work that we've done through the last 7 or 8 months in the final design period, where we've really shrank that footprint from, you know, adding 28 feet to the corridor now up to a maximum of 10 feet. So, you know, already having conversations with members along the corridor who saw one design during environmental when we're really conservative, being able to share that good news to say, hey, now we're down to 10 feet. You know, we're only on one side of the road. So there's a lot of good news stories that we're excited to share at that point in time. We've also had a lot of questions about how do trails get reestablished? How do the stations work? So we're excited to share that news with folks. And we're also going to share information about how this project interacts with other projects along 224. You know, a couple of years ago when UDOT did the paving work up Marsac, you know, UDOT's going to prepare for that in the coming years. There's also a waterline project that goes along across from McPullen Barn. There's also, you know, some work that the city is doing at Snow Creek. So, you know, helping the community understand all the different projects and agencies that are working on the corridor.
Okay, and online you have a little box noting that you are offering impacted property owners to sign up for a special 15-minute meeting. Tell me who these impacted people are and how they're going to be impacted.
Yeah, so folks that live right off of the corridor that, you know, may feel this project a little bit more directly than others, we understand there's going to be some questions and we want to give them, you know, a really good time to have conversation and learn about exactly what construction looks like and what the long-term project looks like. So that's an opportunity for them to sit down with our project leadership and our staff to, you know, walk through those specific details.
So this wouldn't necessarily be at the open house. This would be kind of on their own time.
Correct. Yeah, these are one-on-one, you know, front living room conversations, really helping them to have that time.
Yeah, and I think back, you know, when we widened I-80, we had to build a sound wall. Does anything like that have to happen along 224?
So during the environmental phase, there were two areas along the corridor where it was suggested that the project could increase noise to a point where mitigation could be required. So as I mentioned, as we have reduced the footprint, you know, down from 28 feet down to 10 feet, there's also a number of things that we've done that will reduce the speed of the traveling public through there. So as that project moves forward, we will look at noise again to see, are there still areas where noise reaches that threshold where mitigation is required?
And that mitigation would involve maybe some kind of wall?
It could. That is one option.
Yeah. When is that decision made?
That decision is made really this summer as we take our 60% design coming up on June 25th. And that week we can run through the noise modeling and say, okay, these are the areas where we confirm we need to install some mitigation.
Hmm. All right. And in addition to the narrowing, I guess, of the corridor, what are some of the other design changes that people can expect? You'd mentioned some trail enhancements.
Yeah, so when we talk about narrowing the corridor, that is taking the median from 14 feet as it is today down to 12 feet. The travel lanes today are 12 feet. Those will go down to 11. So those are areas that we can shrink that in to really right size this for the corridor. So those ones we already talked about. The other things are, you know, in the recent years, the Utah legislature has passed some language about the Utah Trail Network. So there is kind of an overriding state standard for trails. So, you know, as the trails we have in the basin were established over time, there's varying degrees of quality, of width, of access. So anywhere that this project comes across and has an impact or touches a trail, those trails actually get widened and get improved to be of a new standard.
So what about the total disconnect that we've got coming southbound on 224 between Sun Peak and Canyons Village, where there is a bus stop, but no, you know, and then it ends.
Are you talking about the trail?
Yeah,
that's actually something I'm pretty excited about. So we've been coordinating very closely with Carl Miller, Brandon Brady, and Eva over at Summit County, as well as Senta Bayer about, you know, what does the trail network look like and how do we fill those gaps? So as we work through this project, looking with our partners to say, are there things that we can do while we're out here working? So there's an effort underway to extend the trail from Canyons up to Sun Peak and another effort to extend it from Sun Peak up to Bear Hollow.
All right. And then you also mentioned the station design. We know that those include, of course, the Kimball Junction Transit Center, the Old Town Transit Center, the Canyons Village Transit Center, which is that where it's always going to stay?
Mm-hmm.
The Canyons Village there? Yeah. And then there's also, we're talking about two other new ones?
Yeah, so two more station pairs, as we call them. So at the intersection of Cutter and Bobsled up in the basin, that's where a pair will go. And then at Snow Creek and Thanes, there will be another pair there.
Okay. Those are approved?
Correct.
All right. Let's see. And then in terms of the turning that might need to be done, how does that work with, you know, at the intersections with the new lanes?
The turning.
Yeah, like left-handing turn, you know, from the buses on the right-hand side going towards Canyons Village.
Yeah.
How does it make its way to make that left-hand turn?
So similar to the way we run the 10X today, as it heads north out of town, it runs in the shoulder, and then right around Har Shalom, it merges over into that left lane to make the left into Canyons. That's how we'll operate, you know, on opening day as we see it right now. We are working with UDOT to understand future traffic conditions. You know, if there's a case where traffic is so rich that we can't get across there, there are things that we're looking at to give transit some priority to jump across there.
Yeah, and what about the proposed changes that may happen to 224 as a result of the traffic upgrades before the Olympics and the Dakota Pacific development?
Yeah, that's a really great question. As I mentioned, we're coordinating really closely with UDOT and Summit County in that area to understand, you know, what is the limit of our project versus, you know, if and when something should occur with the Kimball Junction EIS and Dakota Pacific, how do we dovetail those projects together? I'll say I don't have a crystal ball here. To borrow from my friend Matt Dias, I don't have a magic answer on that, but we are working with UDOT and Summit County to understand how do we dovetail those.
All right, and do you have all the right-of-way that you need to make this
there
happen?
There is still some that needs to be acquired through the project. During the environmental phase, we anticipated a total of 62 parcels in a total aggregate of 2.5 acres. At this point, we're down to about 41, and that's because of all the trimming we've done.
All right, and how is that acquired? Is it done by eminent domain?
So eminent domain is really the last stop on the journey of acquiring right-of-way. Eminent domain is really only used on about 0.5% of total acquisitions. Typically, they're done through a willing buyer, willing seller negotiation, and those really are going to start kicking off this summer. So when we have our 60% submittal on June 25th, that's when we'll know really clearly where is all the right-of-way we need to purchase. And right-of-way comes in different flavors. Sometimes it's just temporary access for construction. Some of it is an easement that we will have for over time. And then sometimes it is we're purchasing it to be owned by the project.
So are we talking about where the new stations are going? Is that where the property needs to be acquired?
That is one case, yeah.
And where's the other?
Up and down the corridor.
All right. Tell us, what's the latest with the BRT alignment in Park City? Plans show it going to Kearns Boulevard. I think there's some effort to maybe stop it at the White Barn.
So I'm going to tag team with Caroline on this, but we are still continuing forward with the BRT to go all the way in dedicated lanes to Kearns Boulevard. And that is, you know, within our funding agreement with FTA, and we are not currently deviating from that plan.
Caroline, can you
add? I wouldn't add that there's an effort to stop it before the White Barn. I would say the conversations are continuing, but the partners are still committed to getting this project done in the most effective way. And the most effective way is to run those dedicated lanes as close to Kearns Boulevard as possible.
All right. So does the city government, do they understand the financing challenges here? I mean, if we don't do the plan that was approved, that we risk perhaps losing funding for the project?
I think they do understand that. But it's, you know, well within their right as elected officials to speak with their staff and the project team about what they see as what they see as a flaw in the plan or to continue to support the plan. I mean, that is their job as elected officials, is to represent what they believe their voters want. I would say that, as I said before, I don't think there's any lack of commitment on any of the parties to get this project done. I think there's just some outstanding questions that maybe elected officials that weren't involved in the process, you know, 8 years ago would like to revisit.
All right. So assuming that it still goes to the BRT, goes to Kearns Boulevard, then tell us what happens there. Any changes at that point?
Yeah, Gabe can talk about the changes to the intersections.
Yeah, so intersections are really handled in where we have what's called mixed flow, where the buses run with cars and every other vehicle. So in the mixed flow case, buses kind of get a priority as signals, where if a bus is running late, it'll hold green a little longer or it'll hold red for other lanes. That's going to be very similar to what you saw here in Park City at the Marsac roundabout this summer, where, you know, this winter, where buses had challenges getting out of the transit center. There was a temporary signal installed to give those buses kind of that priority to get out. So that's sort of the technology that we'll use within Park City limits to get those buses on schedule.
All right. And we at times see the intersection, again, coming south on 224, people trying to make that left-hand turn onto Kearns. They are backed up beyond the turn lane. So how is that going to impact what the buses need to do here?
So the buses, fortunately, in this case, are on the right side.
And never having to make that left-hand
Correct.
Turn. All right. Okay, let's see. Anything else you guys want to mention?
Yeah, we'll see everyone at the open houses.
Okay. And when does construction start for BRT? You'd mentioned June 25th being kind of a big day.
Yeah, so June 25th is our 60% submittal. We'll have 100% plans later this year, probably in December. But through our alternative delivery method system, this is a CMGC project that allows us to get some early work going. So as you talked to Caroline last time, she was mentioning work this fall. So we are targeting a groundbreaking in August this year. So, you know, that's going to be some work on the outside of the road to do some minor utility relocations. And it's also looking like the medians that are in place, you know, around Canyons Village, those will come out to allow some traffic shifting next summer. So we're looking to break ground this fall.
Okay. And that CMCG, tell me what that is.
So CMGC is a method where the contractor is brought on early in the project. That's where the contractor can influence how the project is designed, how it's built, you know, what things are, you know, not necessarily making sense. So that allows us to get their perspective and allows us to work more efficiently through the process.
Okay. Gabe Schultz, Caroline Rodriguez, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Figure Skating Club of Park City is rehearsing for its annual spring show. It's titled Under the Sea on Ice. In the studio with details, I have skaters Dash Williams along with Sosie Shefford and the co-chair of the production, Emily Boyd. Thanks so much for being with us. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
First of all, Dash, let's start with you. I'm sorry to hear that you hurt yourself and you won't be skating. What happened?
So I was walking and I rolled my ankle off the sidewalk. And then we got an MRI, and they have a partial fracture.
Okay, so that means off skates for a while, huh?
Yeah.
That's too bad. How long is that going to be?
5 to 7 weeks.
Sorry to hear about that. What a fluke. So you've been practicing for the role. Who fills in for you?
Ryder Williford.
Yeah, so the directors had to make kind of a last-minute shift last week when Dash got his MRI results. Fortunately, we have a lot of kids in the club that are very adept at learning choreography quickly, and they were able to put one of our, I believe she's a 12-year-old skater, into Dash's role. The unfortunate thing for the show and for Dash is that he's actually, he's a pairs skater now, so he has a pairs partner who he's been rehearsing with, and they'd been, their role was kind of planned around having a really fun pairs routine. So they were gonna do lifts and throws and all that stuff. But the good news is Ryder's a great skater and she's gonna step in and do a great job as well.
Okay, without the pairs.
Without the pairs.
Yeah.
So Dash and his partner were eels in Under the Sea, or I guess it's the Little Mermaid. There's the Ursula's eels that are always together and being kind of sneaky, and that was what they were supposed to do.
Yeah. Well, good luck with the healing. Sosie, tell us about what role you'll be playing.
So in the show, I will be playing the In the Sea, Ariel, and that, yeah, it's going to be super fun. So,
yeah, tell us about some of the big tricks that you'll be performing.
So some of the big tricks I'll be doing is I'm going to be doing a lot of, like, aerials and, like, meaning, like, jumps, and I'll do a couple spins, and I'll just be, like, my big thing is I love skating powerful, so that will be probably what I'll be doing most.
Okay. And how many people are in the production? Any idea?
I think we have 82 this year. And so every year it's kind of grown, and this is our biggest show yet.
Yeah. I mean, is that what you try to do, is try to get everybody in the club?
Pretty much everybody that's in the club does the show. It's usually the kids' favorite time of year. It's a lot of work. They practice for 2 to 3 weeks, 3 days a week, and then do the production. But yeah, we have kids ages 3-ish in the Learn to Skate program through the Park City Ice Arena, all the way up to, I think we have 8 seniors in high school.
All right. So you mentioned, yeah, a lot of work. It sounds like a lot of work, because what, you've got just a lot happening on ice, but then you've got to outfit them all?
Yes. And I'm a co-chair of the show, but the other chair, Taylor Knight, and some helpers have ordered multiple costumes, a costume for everyone in the show. We have group numbers. So we have, like, a group of seagulls and jellyfish, and, like, trying to make the show the most colorful and fun visual production that we can. But also then ordering individual costumes, like Sosie's mermaid costume. And there's, you know, there's the flounder and the crab, Sebastian, and all of those. And, you know, sometimes the kids try the costumes on and they're not exactly what the vision was supposed to be. So Taylor has to shift gears and order something different, but a lot of creativity goes into it as well.
All right. And this is, how long you been skating, Sosie? I mean, it sounds like a big role for you.
Yeah, I've been skating for about, I think, 6-7 years. And yeah, I absolutely love it, so.
Yeah, now, did you have to audition for it?
Yes, we had auditions, I think, early February, and we all were out there, and we had our coaches sitting up in the stands, and we all auditioned, and then we got, like, the cast list the next day.
Yeah, so was that something that you had to perform, something that maybe somebody else couldn't do, that you were chosen? I mean, is that how it...
Well, so during tryouts, we would have to... We had, like, 3 stages. We had, like, an acting stage. We had showing, like, all the tricks you can do. And then we had a learning choreography where our coach would do the choreography for, like, 5 minutes. We had to learn it, and then we would have to perform it in front of them without any of the coach's help. And so, I mean, it was just kind of a matter of fact of kind of which roles filled... like, which people filled the best roles. And, like, yeah, it was an awesome experience.
Oh,
so
great. And, Dash, did you also have to try out?
Well, I was out of town during the tryouts, mm-hmm. so I sent over a virtual tryout. So, basically, Stephanie sent, like, a video of her doing the choreography, and then I had to learn it, and then send a video of me doing the choreography over.
Okay. Well, so next year, huh? Yeah, that's what you're shooting for. Good. All right, Emily, tell us where the performances are happening and how much.
So we have 3 shows this year, and we have one. The first one's this Friday night, May 2nd at 7 p.m., and then we have a 3 p.m. and a 7 p.m. Saturday, May 3rd, this coming Saturday. Tickets are available at figureskatingclubofparkcity.org, and we actually have... If you have kids 5 and under, we have some free options for tickets for them and some discounted options all the way up to, we have a few more spots left right on the ice. So you can buy a chair on the ice. I believe the ones that are left are around $25 to $30. And then everything in between as far as pricing goes.
Is it kind of first come, first serve then for the other stuff?
It's, you can buy tickets at the door and you'll be able to choose your seats, but I would definitely recommend going online and checking out what's available, because the shows are definitely selling out.
Yeah, and they traditionally do.
They do, yes. Now that we've added a third one, it's not quite as much madness for tickets, but if you want to get a good seat.
Yeah, and when you got 82 performers, you've yeah. got parents and siblings.
For sure.
Okay, anything else you want to tell us about the production?
No, I think it's going to be a very colorful, fun adventure under the sea and over the ice, I guess. We've got kids that are going to be doing everything from like just learning to skate to triple jumps and lots of spins, and it's just going to be a lot of fun for about an hour to hour and a half of skating time.
Great. All right. Well, good luck, Sosie, and take care of yourself, Dash.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Park City Council will be holding a special meeting this afternoon to reconsider its decision to use ranked choice voting in the 2025 election. That meeting will be held at City Hall starting at 4 p.m. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports some claim the move is being driven by misinformation.
On Thursday, Park City Councilmember Bill Sirocco said he made a mistake last month when he voted to switch to ranked choice voting for the 2025 election.
Over the past few weeks, I've done an additional amount of research, and some new material has come to light where there are some concerns with voting tabulation software. That is the only tabulation software that's used here in Utah.
He asked if a majority of the council would consider revisiting their decision to use ranked choice voting. Councilmember Jeremy Rubel, who missed the March council vote to adopt ranked choice voting, said he was open to looking at the new information at a special meeting. Ed Parisian, the only council member to vote against ranked choice voting, also supported revisiting the decision. Councilmember Ryan Dickey, who has been an advocate for ranked choice voting, was absent Thursday. Sirocco's suggestion to move back to conventional voting comes 2 days after Dickey announced a run for mayor in this year's election. Along with mayor, Parkites are set to elect two city council members this year. Councilmember Tana Tolley, who plans to seek re-election, was not supportive of reconsidering ranked choice voting and said she was surprised by the suggestion.
We're basically now saying to the public, if you want to run for something, you need to decide here in a month. And we told people we'd give them till August. I think this is just bad form.
Ranked choice voting eliminates the need for a primary election, which pushes the election filing deadline to August rather than June. Ranked choice voting is an alternative voting method that lets voters rank candidates by preference on their ballots. Park City Attorney Margaret Plain asked if the council wanted experts on the voting tabulation software present at the special meeting. Sirocco, Rubel, and Parisian declined. According to an email shared with KPCW, Utah County Clerk Aaron Davidson sent a letter to the council on April 14th encouraging them to reverse their move to ranked choice voting ahead of the state deadline on May 1st. Davidson, who has a history of questioning election integrity, specifically cited issues with Utah's ranked choice voting tabulation software called RCTAB. Davidson was the subject of a Utah County Attorney's Office investigation last year after he publicly revealed the voting method of state lawmakers, according to the Utah News Dispatch. The Deseret News also reported a Utah County commissioner openly called for Davidson to recuse himself after the clerk said Lieutenant Governor Deidre Henderson, who manages elections statewide, should be punished for election fraud. Rosemary Blizzard, the executive director of the Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center, sent a letter to council members after Thursday's meeting calling Davidson's claims false. A report from the Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center did identify discrepancies when conducting research on RCTAB software with ranked choice voting election results in Alaska. The numbers were compared to those tabulated by the Dominion election management system the state uses. Blizzard's letter said the center believes the differences in the results were due to changed tabulation settings that led to inaccuracies. Blizzard said they are confident that the RCTAB software produces correct results. She said the group is disappointed that Davidson has opted to undermine trust in ranked choice voting. Katie Wright, the former executive director of Better Boundaries that led an anti-gerrymandering lawsuit in Utah, condemned the Park City Council's decision in a Friday email shared with KPCW. Wright wrote that Davidson, quote, has a terrible reputation among anyone who works on election integrity, and said the council should stand vigilant against misinformation. A Utah Valley University study analyzing the use of ranked choice voting in Utah found that a majority of voters like using the voting method. The study concluded that roughly the same number of Utah voters prefer conventional single vote plurality as those that prefer ranked choice. It also says that over 80% of Utah voters are confident that their votes are counted accurately under ranked choice voting. Former Heber City Mayor Colleen Potter is the executive director for an organization that advocates for ranked choice voting in Utah.
A lot of this has been influenced by politics, not necessarily what has happened in the elections here in Utah, whether the voters like it, whether they've gone well. It's been something that has become a political thing.
In 2018, Utah legislators passed a bill allowing cities to pilot ranked choice voting through January 2026. A bill to extend the pilot program was not adopted during the legislative session that ended earlier in March. Summit County Clerk E. Furse, whose office calculates Park City's election results, expressed confidence in the RCTAB software. Furse said it's undergone a rigorous approval process at the state and federal level. The Park City Council plans to have the ranked choice voting special meeting Monday at 4 p.m. at City Hall. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
In the studio now with an update from the Park City Chamber Bureau, I have CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Great to be here today.
Yeah, so let's start with the lodging data through the end of March. Basically, that got us through the end of the ski season.
We officially wrapped up the 24-25 ski season, and it ended up being a good season. It was solid. There were definitely ups and downs this season, as we all know, as we made it through a slow start with the snow in December, and then some ups and downs through the season. I have data through the end of March, and March showed that occupancy was up 3%, and average daily rates were also up 1%. So really solid numbers for March. February was strong. April is looking a little slow right now. I know some people call this time of year mud season. I'm officially changing that name to maybe something like wildflower season. Do you think that's more attractive?
The people don't like mud, use it shoulder.
But overall, the season looked really strong. When we look back at the last 6 months of the year, occupancy was up 3%, and average daily rate was up 2%.
Yeah, so that's pretty incredible, given the season that it was.
I think so. I think it's a testament to our business people, to our economy, to the power of the brand of Park City, the fact that we are incredibly resilient. Our technology in snowmaking is one of a kind, and I'm just so proud of the businesses, the nonprofits, the government entities, the staff, for really putting together such a great season, despite the hard, you know, ups and downs of that season. When we look at the tax collections, which for us is really where the rubber meets the road, we do have March data, which still only represents January performance, so we're still a little backwards looking. Local sales taxes for March numbers were up 6%, restaurant taxes up 8%, TRT up 4%, and then the recreation, arts, and parks up 6%. But when you start, you know, we had a lot of variances in the month-to-month numbers over the last 6 months. I think a lot of that was due to reporting timing. So we really look at the year-to-date numbers. And when you look at those year-to-date numbers, local sales taxes were flat, restaurant taxes flat, TRT slightly down about 8%. And also the recreation, arts, and parks taxes are flat right now. So, you know, looking forward at the next 6 months, we're seeing a lot of positive signs, and reservations on the books are ahead of pace, which is really good news despite all of the uncertainty and the political climate in the country. But looking ahead, we're seeing May right now is ahead of pace with reservations on the books by over 30%. June up 16% ahead of pace, and July is also 7% ahead of pace. So I think it's a solid outlook for the next couple of months, and we'll just continue to watch that.
All right, and we certainly had as a result of the ski patrol strike, and several people saying they would never come back and ski Park City. Is that something you're going to watch, or do we just think that people are going to come maybe to the area, maybe ski Deer Valley instead?
We're absolutely watching that. You know, we watch consumer sentiment, travel sentiment. We look at residential sentiment to understand how people are feeling about Park City, about our industry, about our product, what we're offering, the visitor experience. We monitor that monthly and sometimes daily when there are issues going on. So we'll absolutely keep our finger on the pulse of that and continue to advocate for improvements to our tourism amenities and our tourism products as we get ready for the 2034 games.
All right. And then on the TRT, the transient room tax, showing year to date down 8%, yet we still have the room rates up. So how does that work?
You know, our lodging properties are extremely sophisticated in their approach of balancing occupancy and average daily rates. I always like to think about those two indicators as a teeter-totter. Usually when occupancy goes up, rates go down, and when rates go up, occupancy goes down. And their revenue managers are watching this on a daily basis, even an hourly basis, adjusting rates. And, you know, I think we're just starting to see some leveling off. We've had month over month, year over year, and in some cases, double digit growth in both occupancy, in average daily rates. We've seen growth in that TRT year over year. And while the TRT right now is down 8% year to date, it was also a record-breaking year the year before. And every year since I've been here, we've had record-breaking TRT collections, so much so that those collections are now over 19 million. So I think we're just starting to see some leveling off of that that area of tax collections.
All right, and that's how you get funded, you being the Chamber Bureau. Does that impact, or how badly would that impact your budget?
Yeah, 8%. You know, we get 66.66% of the total collections of the TRT in order to reinvest back into the tourism economy to establish and promote enhanced visitor spending in the community. We budget on a fiscal year, so we're just going into our FY26 budgeting process now. Our board will approve that at their meeting in June, and we're anticipating a flat year given all of the data that we've seen, that we look at arrivals at the airport, we look at trends, and we're anticipating that we'll recover right now from that minus 8%, but we'll recover from that, especially as we go into, you know, the next couple of months.
Okay, because that's about $1.5 million.
Mm-hmm. It adds up.
Yeah. All right, let's turn to the 2025 Zions Bank Wasatch Back Economic Summit. We have a date, we have tickets on sale. How are ticket sales going?
Great. We are excited to be hosting this year in conjunction with the Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce at the Grand Hyatt Deer Valley. And the benefit of that is that it's one of the largest meeting space in the area. So it allows us to increase attendance compared to where we've been in the past. So we'll have 400 seats available. We can even increase that a little bit if demand is needed. But we're looking right now, we have about only 100 seats left. So we do encourage folks who are interested in attending to go to parkcitychamber.com/events and register. Tickets are $90 for the full day, and it'll be a full day of really incredible information and keynote speakers that I'm excited to share more about.
Yeah, this is Tuesday, May 13th, and as you mentioned, I guess you're opening up breakfast as soon as 7:30?
We do. We'll open the doors at 7:30. We'll have a light continental breakfast available. Lunch is also included. But what we're really most excited about are the great speakers and panelists and breakout sessions that we have planned for that day. We're changing up the format just a little bit to bring in a few more keynote speakers. Our morning keynote will start promptly at 8:45. And that's going to be Robert Hetrick. He's the senior labor chamber economist, and he wrote a report called The Demographic Drought and the Rising Storm. And I actually read this report several months ago, and it is so interesting to learn about what he's calling the looming labor shortage and what businesses can do to protect themselves. So that's going to be really interesting. That's going to be a great keynote to start off the day. We'll then have some breakout sessions, which I'll talk about in just a few minutes. But the lunch keynote is Robert Spendlove with Zions Bank. He has participated in this event for many years. He's an audience favorite. He really talks about the economic landscape at the state, the national level, the state level, and then also brings it down to what we can see here in the Wasatch Back, and gives us some tips on how we can sort of navigate some of that uncertainty that we're seeing in the trends for the 2025 landscape. And then we'll end the day with an additional keynote. I had the opportunity to hear Andreas Mueller-Schubert at a chamber conference several months ago. And he's going to talk about AI and how AI is transforming business and the workplace. And I think he will leave us with some really interesting ideas and food for thought as we navigate how AI interacts with our business community and our lives.
And they're set to speak for about an hour.
Yeah? We do, yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. We have enough time for them to go to the level of detail that I think our audience wants. And then the breakout sessions are all the topics that our businesses and community leaders say that they want to talk about, they want to hear more about, and our priorities for our communities. So we'll have several breakout sessions, including a breakout on transportation and transit, housing and economic expansion, workforce. We'll have a legislative landscape update. We'll talk about development and redevelopment in our communities. And then we'll have a breakout session on the intersection between recreation, open space, and energy production. So it's going to be an incredibly informative day and just an opportunity to get to know our friends in the Wasatch Back.
Yeah. Can you give me more insight onto the Rob Hetricks? I mean, when you talk about the looming labor shortage, is he talking about that we're closing the border and not allowing new immigrants to come in and work, or are we just talking about a lowering birth rate, or do you know?
Yeah, well, when I read the report, it's a very thorough report. It does talk about a little bit about immigration and the border, but it talks more about the changing population and the boomers leaving the workforce and not having enough infill to fill those departing boomers who are retiring. So it's incredibly interesting. He also talks about AI and the role of AI. It's a little scary when you hear about and you read the data about the need for labor, and especially here in our communities where housing is an issue. You know, we have employees traveling into our communities, passing up jobs along the way, you know, along the road. We have to really think about how can we incentivize our employees to continue to come and work in Park City and Summit County and to provide the level of service that we're really looking for to maintain those average daily rates that we are lucky enough to receive and charge, and then also the visitor experience that we expect.
Okay. More information is what, just online to get tickets as well?
ParkCityChamber.com, and you can click on events.
Okay. Just a couple minutes we've got left. Let's talk a little bit about the Wasatch Back Business University segment coming up.
We have an event, the Business University again. We're partnering with the Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce on this. This is on May 7th at the Blair Education Center. This is free for our members. It's over lunchtime. It's 11:30 to 1. And this topic is particularly around mastering financial planning and cash flow management. I think our businesses particularly need this as we go into this real seasonality where we're booming during the ski season. We have a little bit of a slower drop in the April, May timeframe, and then we have these fluctuations month to month. So it's a great opportunity for businesses to learn about tax planning, effective strategies related to compliance and budgeting and forecasting. Really great information there.
And before I let you go, we do want to make sure that people know about the third annual Sustainable Tourism Grant. They are now open, but they will close this Friday. So if somebody's interested, they need to get on it now.
Apply today. Go to parkcitychamber.com for more information.
Okay. We'll talk more about that and the grants you kind of see at our next time.
Sounds great. Thanks, okay. Leslie.
Jennifer Wassohoff is the CEO of the Park City Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau. I'm